Welcome to Valhalla Conversations Podcast. I'm your host, Becky Hill, otherwise known as Soul Chaser Becky, and I am a proud Viking geek. I fell in love with the history, culture, and mythology of the Viking Age, and I have been on an endless quest for more ever since. Join me as I discuss all things Norse with those who have been inspired by Viking Age history and Norse mythology in their creative works, or those who have studied the sagas and archaeology, and review how such subjects are being presented to modern audiences today. If you like Viking stuff, you are welcome in my Valhalla, and I hope you stay for the conversation. This episode of Valhalla Conversations is dedicated to comic artist Tim Odland, who sadly passed away this summer of 2025. Tim's lifelong dream was to illustrate a comic published by Image Comics. Beware the Eye of Odin is that comic, that dream. I will treasure it always in Tim's memory for an example of his amazing talent. Thank you for your dream, Tim. Rest in peace. Welcome everyone to Valhalla Conversations podcast. After a bit of hiatus through September and October for a wonderful variety of reasons, we are back. Valhalla is open and our newest guest, I am delighted to announce, is Doug Wagner. And he is here to speak to me about his wonderful comic, or comic book, because I have the combined edition here, called Beware the Eye of Odin. Now, if that doesn't scream Viking to you, then you need glasses. So welcome, Doug. Welcome to Valhalla.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, Becca. I've been looking forward to talking to you. So this is awesome.
Brilliant. Would I be safe to say that maybe this particular comic series is one of your lesser known titles? Because I know you've kind of got a wonderful serial killer fashionista comic arc going on that's only recently finished, I believe.
Yeah, that would be fair. Yeah, Beware the Odin is definitely probably one of my lesser known titles. I've kind of become known, whether I wanted to or not, for doing serial killers and cannibalistic furries. So, you know, that's kind of like what I'm known for. But, you know, I do love to dive into other stuff. So this is one of my favorites.
Oh, well, I'm pleased. Well, I don't know how it came up on my algorithm on socials. And I was like, I need to have that. That looks amazing. So I went straight to my local comic book shop. And thankfully, Kapow Comics were able to get it in for me. And I've reread it at least twice now. And I just absolutely love it. So I guess we should start at the beginning of, like, where did the idea for this amazing original Norse story, in a way, come from?
Well, I mean, Tim Odland, the artist, and I, we started out, I moved here in Utah probably about 10 years ago. And he and I just started like going to, I met him at, I'm getting confused. Let me start over. So we met at what we have down in Salt Lake, a drink and draw. So a lot of comic book artists and other artists from animation and stuff get together once a week and just kind of like sit and talk business and doodle and that kind of stuff. And we found out like we live like 5 minutes from each other. So we started like, I was like, hey, why don't we just start riding together and save the gas money? Cause it's like a 30-minute trip for us. And we started driving together and quickly became friends. Tim was like one of the sweetest human beings that ever met, you know, and he was an artist. And I loved his work. And then we decided we wanted to meet together just one-on-one. So strangely as it is, we started meeting every Wednesday for lunch at Taco Bell. And we probably met there for like 3 or 4 months. And then one day he goes, hey, why don't we work on something together? And I go, dude, I'd love to work with you. Like, I love you. I love your work. Let's do something. I was like, do you have anything in mind? He goes, all he said was, I want to do trolls versus Vikings.
Oh
yeah. And I was like, yeah. Sold. You know, it was an easy like, oh yeah, dude, let's do that. And our first plan was to do like a 40-page one shot. You've obviously read the trade now. It got kind of, we kind of got away because we just loved the characters and what we were doing on the book. And he'd add pages and I'd add pages. And it just became like this 200, you know, kind of magnum opus style, you know, and we were going to release it online at first, you know, that was a plan. But, you know, that's how it came to be. That was the basic premise, was I want to do Trolls versus Vikings.
It's sometimes the simplest ideas are the best ideas. And I love that. And there are definitely trolls and there are definitely Vikings in this book. So you've still ticked that off wonderfully well. And I must say, kind of like, Tim's art is absolutely gorgeous. I just love it. And if I could have that cover as a in a frame on a wall, I definitely would have. Not that I have many walls in this house that I can put my Viking stuff on, because I live with a family, so pretty much it's all family photos. Alas, I will have a Becky cave one day. Obviously, let's dive into the three protagonists, because there are three. There is Helgi, a Norse prince, who has some father issues, some issues with self-esteem, possibly a cursed axe. I'm trying not to give away too much. There is Stigger, who is a one-armed smith who's past his prime, as your own blurb says, and he's trying to refind himself as a warrior, because people see him as ex-warrior because he's only got one arm, as you would understand, because you can't really do much with one arm. But he finds a way, a very genius way. I absolutely love it. And my favourite character of all, because Valkyries are my catnip, is Caitlin, who, in the words of the blurb, is a female warrior convinced she is a Valkyrie. And I just love that hint of doubt, kind of like, is she the crazy lady of the village, or is she real? And I just absolutely love her absolute kind of like just childlike joy, and the fact that she has a little one-eyed mouse as a companion. I thought that was just a lovely twist. So how did you come about with these three characters then?
I mean, it all started with Helgi, obviously, you know, since he's the main character, and we're kind of, okay, what can we do with something that's a little different with Vikings? We came up with Helgi, and then Tim was the one that was like, hey, I got this idea for a one-armed character. And I was like, okay, I don't know what I'm going to do with that, but let's do it. You know, it's like, you know, Tim and I would just kind of throw out crazy ideas. And then I was the one that was like, hey, I'd like, you know, to kind of have like a female character to you know, kind of finish out the little team we made. And you know, just kind of started going, hey, I want something a little different, a little off center. And Caitlin came to mind. I was like, oh, what if she thought she was a Valkyrie? Like, what would that look like? And how would the town treat her? You know, so it was really important to us to have like Helgi, who's clearly, I mean, in regular society would be a prince. So, you know, he'd be on the upper echelon, surrounded by kind of like two misfits. You know, the kind of the town kind of have dismissed these people as maybe not, you know, the normal worthiness you'd see in a society. And so it's very important us to like throw that into Helgi, because, you know, as you mentioned, like, he thinks he's cursed. And so he's like, oh, of course I get these two, you know, because like I'm a crazy person who thinks she's a Valkyrie and a guy who's a warrior, which makes no sense. You know, like, yeah, that was really kind of like, you know, just us throwing around ideas. And then Tim, like, you know, he ran off with Caitlin immediately and came back with that cloak that she wears. It was just, you know, magnificent. Again, don't want to spoil too much, you know, like, you know, where we want to go with that. But then, like, I was like, man, we need a little animal in the mix. And that's where the one I came in, that kind of like, she thinks whispers sweet things in her ear.
Well, I must admit, kind of like, it was only after the second reading that Helgi really stuck out to me as having definite connection with genuine Norse sagas. And I don't know if you ever kind of like read the poetic Edda or the prose Edda and come across the saga of Helgi Hundingsbane.
Yep, definitely. I mean, yeah, I mean, what was fantastic about this whole thing is Tim is actually, like, he's first generation Norwegian American.
So
Tim is a Viking. So, you know, it was kind of fun, because he would start talking about stuff that necessarily here in America, when we learned Norse mythology, they didn't dive much into. So, like, I knew a little bit about trolls, but not as much as, you know, like, Tim grew up as like, that's a major part of their mythology. And so, you know, elves and all these kind of things that he had, you know, and how they celebrated Christmas was different than how I celebrated Christmas growing up. And so I have to give a lot of that to Tim, because he would hand me books and go, hey, read this and let's use this for inspiration. He goes, I want to do something that's based on Norse mythology, but not necessarily as retelling Norse mythology, like spin on it. Because that's kind of like trolls became the main villain, because, you know, obviously everybody's kind of done the frost giants and, you know, we can go on and the things that have been used. You know, so we kind of wanted to touch on stuff like, you know, Earthian smiths and elves, but not necessarily make them the focal point.
That's a good point about the Earthian smiths as well, because I thought, oh, this is a really fresh take on dwarves. And I really, really like it. I absolutely love, because certainly kind of in the kind of like original tellings, they say with the Eddas, mainly kind of when they describe how the races came to be, the dwarves are always described as being kind of like being earthy or underground, like from the underground layer of Midgard, not from the top, like mortals and humans are. And I thought that's a really clever twist on it. Really clever twist. And it certainly explains why they're so good as smiths, because they know their metals and their ore.
That's, and then you went right down the same path that we did when we were thinking about it. Like, how is this a little different? It's like, well, they're kind of like mountain people. They live inside mountains. Like, what would they look like? You know, like humans need light. You know, we need outside. Mm. And so, like, that's where we kind of like wanted to do a little shift and go, oh, wait a minute. What if they're real mountain people? Like, we take that literally. You know, and so that's kind of like we kind of dove down that rabbit hole.
Well, it's wonderfully done. And certainly it is a refreshing change from having Vikings versus giants, because, of course, giants are always the enemies, at least for the gods, at least. So it kind of makes sense to then make them the enemies of the humans. Not that you ever read about that much in kind of like original or even contemporary sources. And certainly thinking about to how prominent trolls are, it's made me remember that when I went to Norway for the first time last summer, for my little humble academic debut, I did bring back a children's story about a little troll. And there were lots of trolls in there, including some with multiple heads and multiple eyes, or even one with three heads and sharing one eye, which was really weird. But it just shows a variety, and the variety of trolls you guys have come up with in this book. I mean, they're all incredibly grotesque. They're genuinely not nice characters, and I absolutely applaud the variety of grotesqueness you've invented.
I mean, I have to give all that credit to Tim. Tim, you know, and I was thinking classic, you know, forearm, or, you know, four limb, one head. And Tim came and he's like, man, I want to do something crazy. And he started showing me all these things that he'd been doing for years on trolls, because, you know, it's one of his favorites. Wow. And I was like, dude, we have to do those. Like, there's no doubt. You know, and then it was just like, how do we fit them in there, and how do we, like, interpret their society? You know, and how can we have fun with, like, you know, and as you see in the book, when we have two hit, you know, sometimes when we have a head with more than one troll, I mean, a troll with one head, you know, they're trying to talk, you know, those kind of things. It's fun with, like, hey, let's play with this, make it a little grotesque, make it a little bit horrific, but at the same time, how can we still have fun?
It's wonderful. I would like to touch a bit on perhaps the cursed axe that Helgi has, and I just love the name Mischief's Whisper, because it's just such a gorgeous name, and the fact that you then tie it into how it's come from deep within the earth near Loki, and of course nothing good ever comes from Loki. That's why Loki's always been tainted with mischief and mayhem and chaos, and I really love that, because of course there's lots of elements of cursed items in Norse mythology. Like, I only recently in the spring learned more about the curse or Tyrfing and that whole saga of kind of like killing one generation off after another, because it's just, that's what it's destined to do. And I really like that, and it really suits his character in trying to find his own identity and strength and confidence in that, because he thinks he's cursed because of all the sad, unfortunate circumstances that happened around him growing up, and hence that's why no one really wants him in the village. But then, because he's good with the axe, that gives him that false kind of confident over-reliance on it, in a way. And I really liked how you explored that narratively and, of course, within Tim's wonderful artwork.
Yeah, I mean, we had so much fun with that character and the axe, too, because, like you said, like, Helgi is so desperate to be successful and be accepted, that, like, finding something that makes him feel more powerful, he's immediately going to be drawn to it, which I think leads into, like, Loki in my head. Like, he's not going to be the guy that, like, just comes out and says, hey, I'm going to help you, but I'm going to destroy you at the same time. You know, it's like he's one of those guys that's going to, like, whisper in your ear and make you feel more confident and feel more confident and get you to a point to where, like, you feel invincible and then take it away from you. And so that was like our whole thing with the axe was like, hey, how can we, like, use this against Helgi? And it's going to continue to make him feel more and more confident and get him closer to what he thinks he wants. But hopefully what, you know, we pulled off in the story, he learns, like, oh, wait a minute, that's not really what I wanted all along.
It's wonderful, and I really appreciated Stigger's kind of arc evolving, kind of like his, and he says it so many times, of course, particularly to Helgi, kind of like, you don't decide my fate, I decide it. And that kind of like that self-determinism is so strong. It comes through in so many different sources to do with the Vikings, kind of. And it's certainly, it's hard to say whether it's one that we've enhanced or elaborated on, being kind of like so many centuries removed now, because that's our ideal of the Vikings, that they kind of like go to death with a sword in their hand or nothing at all, kind of thing. But I really liked that. And of course, that was the other thing I was going to ask, actually. What made you decide? I mean, I know you said Tim came through with the design for Caitlin, but was it always clear from the start that you were going to have her as a Valkyrie wannabe, or were you going to possibly make her go down the Shield Maiden type route?
Oh, from day one, we wanted her to be like, go down the Valkyrie path.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, you know, I'm a Valkyrie, I'm a proud warrior, you know, like I've been to be the one on Earth, you know, kind of thing, and follow that path all along and make it so that, like, hopefully throughout the whole story, even the reader is not sure, because, you know, Helgi and Steiger definitely aren't sure that she's saying, you know, it's like, what, you're Valkyrie, like, you know, okay, you know, and that's touching on, and for us, it was like touching on religion as a whole, you know, it's like believing in unseen things, and like, what is your religion based on, and that faith, and Caitlin to us was like the ultimate person of faith. She's like, she knows that this is all true, and you can kind of tell, well, Helgi and Steiger are like, they do have their faith. It's not necessarily like, you know, there's moments where you're like, hey, I'm not sure I believe all of this. You know, like, I'm not sure I believe in all of the stuff that I hear, you know, because it's, you know, as children we hear these tales, you know, you're like, well, I don't know if an invisible person can do that, you know. So, you know, that's what we kind of really wanted to lean into too with her.
Well, that brings me to the kind of like to those first few lines on those first few pages about Helgi kind of like saying, kind of like, my father told me tales of this, that, and that happening, kind of like, okay, Stigger, now I've got a dead giant in my throne room, can you please tell me, are they all true? And then I'm like, wow, that is such a brilliant hook to bring the reader in, and you do hit the story running. There's no great narrative build-up or even background setup for either these characters, but we kind of like, they're so well defined, the reader doesn't really need to know any great detail. You get the odd bits from them all in conversation with each other, and that's enough to still help them feel fully embodied, so to speak, even though I personally would love to see kind of like how Caitlin first decided to declare herself as a Valkyrie wannabe, and what happened with Stigger and his father, and of course, ideally, how that giant came to be in the village and how Helgi killed him, of course.
Well, and that's fair, because I remember when we were talking about the initial that was supposed to be 40 pages. So with only 40 pages, we were thinking we had to dive in quick. And so we passed all the typical narrative that you normally get in a buildup, you know, in the first act of a story. And so we kind of had to just go, hey, we're going to dive deep in first. And then somehow 40 pages turned into 200. So you're fair in saying that, because initially we were just doing 40. Like, we were convinced we were only doing 40 and just got carried away.
Well, what you guys have achieved is sensational. And I definitely would, if there was a prologue or even a sequel to this, I would be all for it. It would get my money from the word go. Most Viking things do, to be fair. So, interestingly enough, kind of the idea of Odin's eye being involved is something I've never actually come across before, because, of course, most people who have this basic understanding of Odin know that he gave up an eye for wisdom. Traditionally, or canonically, it's just sat in the bottom of a well somewhere and doesn't do anything. But I love how somehow it's come out of that well and passed around hands like a cursed object, as it does. And, of course, tells Helgi that if you don't return me to my rightful owner, then I will curse you with the death of blisters and boils and decay and all sorts. It did make me think back to, of course, the ring from Lord of the Rings. And I think that's what one of the reviewers on the back of the book, comiccon.com, says. It's one part Lord of the Rings, another part Netflix's Norseman, which I think is a really out description. Because it has got some lovely humour to it, as well as kind of like the kind of deeper exploration of just being a human in this fantastical world, which is sensational. But interestingly, that you guys kind of then must have discussed and decided that it wasn't going to go back to Mimir as well as such, but go back to Mimir, who's alive and well, albeit king of the frost giants in this universe.
Yeah, I mean, for us, you know, when we started, we're going to get a visitor. I got Abraham, my cat's going to come join us.
Cats are always welcome.
Yeah, he's going to do
what he wants. He doesn't press the stop recording button.
But I mean, for us, like, what was cool is when we started thinking about, like, what's going to be the driving force behind this. And we wanted, you know, obviously got to come up with something to keep the characters moving forward. And, you know, we just kind of bumped around on the Eye of Odin. I was like, hey, imagine if that was real. And, like, what would somebody like Odin do to it to make sure that, like, because to us, I mean, having Odin's eye would be like a weapon, like an unimaginably magical, unstoppable weapon. And so we came up with that kind of idea. And it's like, well, wait a minute, Odin wouldn't let anybody just have it. So, like, he gave it to somebody and then he's going to curse it so that nobody else can ever have it and use it.
Interesting.
So that was our whole, you know, again, we're making our own Norse mythology at that point. But, you know, the president was like, hey, this would be kind of a fun, you know, translation of what we've seen before. And you know, we loved playing with that eye and having it, like, actually move around in the liquid and you know, look at stuff. And, yeah, so that's kind of, it was just the driving mechanism for our whole story.
It works really, really well. And it's something I've always really admired about the Norse mythology, and that because it's not treated as almost like a sacred set of stories, such as like the Bible or in Hinduism or in Buddhism, there is that freedom to play, that freedom to manipulate, to readjust, to reset things. And I must say, kind of like since the 18th century with Wagner, of course, people have just taken it and just run. And the things people have come up with, it both respects and also reflects the time that it was done. And I absolutely love what you guys, I just love it. I absolutely love it. Cool. I was going to say, did you ever discuss plans for maybe doing a sequel from all the pages that you couldn't quite fit in, or was there ever an option for that?
Oh yeah. I mean, with Tim and I, obviously there was, I mean, I talked about this to him. Unfortunately, Tim passed away this year. So, you know, obviously I wouldn't touch it without him. You know, to me, it's, you know, and I know that might make some people sad. It kind of makes me sad too, but it wouldn't be right for me to continue to do something with this without him. You know, it's just, it wouldn't be right. It wouldn't feel right for me anyway. And so, yeah, we had talked about like, oh, what else could we do if we kept going, you know, and it, because there's just so much more, you know, we kind of left it on the cliffhanger of like, you know, with Helgi and Caitlin, and you kind of learn some new stuff. And it's like, yeah, we could definitely do some more. And so there was definitely plans of possibly doing another sequel, but unfortunately Tim just got sick and we had to put that on the side.
Yeah, it is. I was very, very sad to learn Tim had passed, because if I could have had him on as well, that would just, it would have made this twice as fun. It really would have. And it's a shame, but I'll never get to tell him personally how much his art is amazing. But I hope, and I know kind of like from the way you talk about him, he enjoyed doing that. And if he enjoyed doing this, then that's all that really matters, really.
Oh yeah, Tim loved nothing more than drawing, and loved nothing more than comics. He had a really fun picture that he showed me. He read his first he started reading comics at age 10, and he bumped into like Spawn and Youngblood, you know, the Image classic stuff. And he went out and bought a drawing desk that week, and said, someday I'm going to draw comics and work for Image, you know. And we kind of didn't talk about like how this all came about as far as the Image side of things. But like Tim's ultimate dream was always to do a book for Image, and so that happened. And so luckily, before Tim passed, he actually had got a chance to make his dream come true. And so that'll always be a special place in my heart too. That like Tim just wanted to draw comics and nothing more than drawing for Image, and somehow we managed to make that happen. You know, so like it's a pretty exciting. I mean, you got time for me to tell you that story?
Yes, please do. Please do.
So Tim and I have been working on this book, you know, and we're doing it on our free time. So we've been working on this book probably for a year, maybe two. And he ended up moving to Minnesota. And so, you know, we talk online and stuff like this. And he goes, hey, I want to go to this tiny little convention in Minnesota. And then he calls me and he's like, hey, I went to this little convention and Eric Stevenson, the president of Image Comics, was there, and I showed him the paper. And I was like, oh, okay. He goes, I hope that you don't mind me, you know, just showing it as part of my portfolio. And I was like, of course not. Well, then like the very next day I get a an email from Eric, because I've been working with Image since 2004. Mm-hmm. And he goes, "Hey, how come you haven't told me about this Viking book?" And I was like, "I didn't know, like, you know, there was no plan, you know, like, I hadn't even thought about it." And so Eric called me and he's like, "Hey, dude, I want this book." And so it was just like this random, like, Tim showing up to this tiny little convention in Minnesota and showing his pages to Eric, and Eric calling me the next day going, "Hey, I need this book." And that's how Tim managed to somehow, through blind luck, get to do his first Image book.
Well, it sounds like fate, the norms, the good vibes of the universe were leading him step by step to the right people at the right time. First meeting you, finding that connection, and then, of course, finding Eric at that Comic-Con. Oh, wow. I'm so pleased he did get to achieve this, as untimely as his parting was. Because kind of like having achieved my dream only last year of talking about Valkyries in Norway, of all places, that I never thought I'd ever get set foot on. It's immensely fulfilling once you have that moment, no matter how big or small or how niche it is. And yeah, I have to agree, as sad as it is that there won't be more of this universe, I totally respect that it will then forever be Tim's.
Yep.
Yeah, it's stunning. And the Holger folk, they're always staring at me from the cover because there's so many of them. The Holger folk are like little imps. And they're vicious looking little imps. And I love the strange language that they're all muttering as they're all taking bits and pieces when they find these three protagonists deep in the murky woods trying to get through. Especially, of course, when Caitlin says kind of like, "Oh yeah, kind of like, don't trust them, they're vicious, they're mean," and they only just see one. And then the whole mass of them appears on the page. I thought that is a masterstroke of comic and artistry genius. It was wonderful, that one.
Oh, thanks. And I mean, that with those guys, like, I struggled a little bit because I kind of had them in my head from the very beginning when we started doing the story. Ah. And there's no, you know, classical Holger folk in Norse mythology. So like we were struggling with that a little bit, but Tim was like, "You know, we can make up our own stuff from time to time. Let's do it." Mm-hmm. Like you said, like he draws one on one page, and then I can't imagine how many he drew on the next page. There's like 50 plus. Mm-hmm. And he puts the page, and I'm like, "Dude, like you don't have to draw this many." He's like, "Oh no, like this book has to be perfect." And so, like, the fact that he spent days drawing that page, you know, each little Holger folk that you see in there, you know, just amazing that he went to that extent. But we had so much fun with those little characters and the fact that they were just like, there's like a force of nature, right? They'd come through, they take shiny stuff, and they leave. And as long as you don't mess with that, you're fine. But the second, you know, like, but they also, if they bite you, you know, like they have the venom of you know, a world serpent, you know? So like, just stay still, let them take your shiny stuff, and they'll leave you alone. And so we had so much fun with those. You know, that was one of my favorite parts of the book.
So how long overall did it take you both? You said we work on it for like 1.5 to 2 years? Was that the core that has come out now, or is that on the whole mass that you then had to shrink down a bit?
Oh no, I mean, for us, we spent probably about 4 years doing the book.
Oh.
And so, you know, obviously it's easier for me because I'm the writer. So I could write a couple of pages and give it to Tim, and then he'd run off and, you know, we're both working full time at other jobs and doing this on the side. Mm-hmm. And you know, so I mean, I was fine with it. I told Tim that right up front. I was like, "Hey, dude, there's no rush. You know, neither one of us are getting paid to do this. When we get done, we get done." And so, yeah, it took about 4 years, and I was fine with that. Like I said, I was completely happy to give Tim the time he needed to do. As you've seen the pages, these incredible pages, and sometimes where you have 50 plus Holger folk on a single panel, you know, and you're like, "This is unbelievable." Like, so I was more than happy to give him all the time he needed.
Oh, well, it really shows it. I mean, the length of detail, just kind of like, it's just astonishing. It absolutely and wonderfully is. Were there any other protagonists that you considered when you were developing this narrative, or did you always have in mind it would be kind of like an older guy, a young guy, and then at least a woman of some description type or other?
No, I mean, pretty much it had always been, I mean, we never went past three. I think it kind of just fit, you know, when we got, like, we initially came up with Helgi, and then he hit me with Steiger, and then we came up with Caitlin, and I was like, you know, I think this is the perfect trio to kind of carry out the story. We don't need more. And, you know, I mean, obviously we could have put a bigger band together, but again, at the same time, as I said before, we're thinking 40 pages, so we wouldn't have to really dive into all the characters. And so luckily three was exactly what we needed. And I think it ended up being perfect.
So since kind of like working on this, did you develop more of a taste or a curiosity for Norse mythology and Vikingy stuff? Or was it pretty much just during this window working on this book?
No, I've still read stuff from time to time on it, but reading through then was just amazing for me because I did not realize the impact and the reach that Norse mythology had across the world. You know, you start talking about this stuff and you go, you know, we've mentioned it before, like you're like, oh, wait a minute, Lord of the Rings is Norse mythology. And so, like, you know, people think of it as, you know, almost like a European thing. But then when you start digging deeper into like Norse mythology and stuff and you hit that and you see the influences in Greek and Roman mythology. And, like, you know, we start talking about the days of the week, you know, and you're like, oh, wait a minute, most of the days of the week are named after Norse gods. And you're like, you don't understand the huge impact I think that Vikings and Norse culture had on the entire world until you start diving into it and going, oh, wait a minute. There's even some, you know, tales from Norse mythology that leaked their way into the Bible. And you're just like, oh, wow. Like this is, I did not realize the reach this tiny section of the world had the entire world and still does. And so you love reading about, honestly, all the mythologies are, I love them because they're all, you know, some of them are so strange. Especially ones and African ones, and you're like, oh, I'd never heard of any of this, and this is crazy. Kind of, you know, I think being obviously being European, more European influence, you know, with Europe and in the US, we get a little bit of the Greek mythology. So we're like, oh, an eight-legged horse, who cares? We've seen before. You're like, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. So I love it. I love it all, and it's so fascinating, and it's fun to read. You know, I know why they made Thor the main character, but it's funny to read Norse mythology, the Thor, and then we get, you know, like the Marvel Universe one where he's not a complete bumbling man of nothing but idiocy. You know, like I love the fact that the son of Odin is basically a complete moron, and, you know, in Norse mythology, and you love him for it because he's so dumb, you root for him. And I think that's what's fantastic about that character in the Norse mythology. But like I said, I love it all. I love diving into it. And it's so fun and wonderful and weird, you know, based on, you know, what I've been experienced to previously. And like I said, even talking with Tim, like, you know, like their little Christmas elf that lives in the barn and brings in gifts, Santa Claus, you know, and those kind of things. And how his dad, and Tim did this until he passed as well. Like, they dressed up as the elf on Christmas Eve, and they come in and, you know, that's how they celebrated Christmas. And I was like, wait, what? Like, you know, I'm very classic, like American trained, you know, like, hey, Santa Claus tonight, blah, blah, blah. And to see them do that was amazing.
That's really nice to hear, because it's always interesting, because it's a question that kind of like I got asked myself at my kind of like little academic debut last year, kind of like, as much as I've loved reading all things Norse, especially in fantasy fiction, but I'm definitely diving more and more into comics wherever I can find them. Like, there's another comic coming out in October. No, we're already in October. November. November, called Viking Moon, and it's basically Vikings versus werewolves in the newly discovered Americas, which, again, is a crazy idea, but somehow it works narratively because, hey, why not? It's like kind of like, has anyone ever find themselves going back to try and find out more about the original sources that inspired these modern interpretations, whether they're interpretations or retellings or complete fictional fabrications with Norse elements. And it's nice to hear that you've found equal fun and enjoyment in them as much as I have.
Well, I mean, Tim and his mom would bring me books that we can't get in America that were Norse mythology. And so it was like a totally different take, right? Because it's from for that those people in that area versus, you know, the Americanized version that, you know, oh, well, we'll accept that here because, you know, this is the only text we're going to use for Viking mythology. And they had tons of books. And so that was, I mean, that helped me so much to kind of get the feel for everything in the book itself. Because I was like, oh, wait a minute, we need to put this in there, you know, because like it was just, like I said, it's an amazing, I'm getting lost in thought, you know, just because. You know, my head's just stewing and all the wonderful things that I learned and how amazing it was and how magical it was. And I was like, I wish I'd have learned this stuff when I was a kid.
I mean, it is an interesting point because, of course, in America, you have Leif Erikson Day, I assume, kind of, because, of course, it discovered the Americas before Columbus did. Of course, in the UK, we're kind of riddled with Viking references historically because they invaded us so many times and changed our culture so much. But then we've got so many layers of other invasions and other peoples. It's all kind of a mix. But I've never really, I don't have many friends that are properly, fully kind of like Norwegian or Danish or even Swedish. So I've never really encountered anyone to see how the actual like home nation of the Vikings see the Viking history. Because of course we learn about English history, you learn about American history, and I don't know if they learn that much more about their own complicated history in the Viking age or just focus on how the nations evolved into the nations they are today. Because of course they were as splintered as England was back in the Viking age. There wasn't an England in the Viking age at all for a long time.
No, I mean, you're right. Like it's great to dive into that kind of stuff and like Michelle Madsen, the colorist of the book, she's also first generation.
Oh, really?
Norwegian. Yeah. So we'd get on conference calls and they would talk, which I just referred to as Viking. I didn't understand a single word of it. We'd talk back and forth for a couple of minutes in you know, Norse. And it was just amazing. Like, you know, and then they'd start telling you tales of stuff. Like, I think where they passed it down more, like through families, like they passed their history down, I think, more so than say we do, where we learn it in school. They would, you know, this is the things they learned, and they just kind of took it for granted, you know, as far as like, oh, we thought everybody knew this. And I was like, nobody knows this. It's like, I've never heard of any of this stuff. This is fantastic. Cause you know, I'm one of those people that just loves to learn new stuff. And so getting to tell me tales of stuff of like, you know, oh, well, my parents did this and this is how they were raised. And you're like, that's insane. You know, like it's just, so it was really cool. Like I said, it was fun hanging out with both of them doing this book.
Oh, that's really nice that there's such like, that is that strong heritage influence and connection coming all the way through. And I do implore anyone who's listening or watching to find Beware the Eye of Odin, whether it's a single issue or the combined paperback form. Go to your local comic book shop, check out your library, see if it's on Amazon, download it, borrow it, read it. It is absolutely phenomenal. I absolutely love it. And there's so much more I could talk about, but I'm trying not to spoil it for everyone. Excuse me. Had my cough, people. That's another reason why things have been difficult for the past week or two. But oh yes, it's been such a pleasure speaking to you about this. Are there any other projects that you might be working on that you might like to share with viewers and listeners today?
As I'm sure you know, like my publishers don't like me to talk about anything until they announce it. So
fair enough.
I'll be a good person. Keep my jobs. So I can't really talk. Obviously I've got if anybody's into cyberpunk, but I've got a cyberpunk 2077 miniseries coming out through Dark Horse in January.
Ooh, very good.
Talk about that. Yeah. The rest of the guys and I, we just keep working on books and there'll be more books out next year. So
mm-hmm. Oh, wonderful. I'm so glad that you got constant projects coming through and hopefully you're enjoying all of them as much as you enjoyed this one.
Yep.
Thank you so much for joining me in Valhalla today, Doug. It's been a real pleasure. And I'm sure I will be emailing you again with any more questions and fangirling observations about this wonderful book.
Becky, the pleasure has been all mine. Thank you for reaching out and doing this, and always feel free to reach out with more questions.
Thank you. I will do. Quite often, as I say to most people in my normal life who meet me, very often you do escape. You don't often escape once you've met me. Once I've got your email address or your WhatsApp number on, I'm on you. Especially if it's about Vikings or Valkyries, I'm definitely interested. And of course, thank you to your cat for her wonderful showcase.
Every podcast he shows up for. So he's my biggest podcast fan.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
This episode of Valhalla Conversations is dedicated to comic artist Tim Odland, who sadly passed away this summer of 2025. Tim's lifelong dream was to illustrate a comic published by Image Comics. Beware the Eye of Odin is that comic, that dream. I will treasure it always in Tim's memory for an example of his amazing talent. Thank you for your dream, Tim. Rest in peace. Thank you very much for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed the discussions between my special guests and myself. Please do check out the episode blurb for links to their works and websites. If you liked this episode, let me know by giving it a thumbs up. Let me know if you learned something new in the comments. And of course, click subscribe to Valhalla Conversations wherever you are listening or watching. This podcast can be watched on YouTube and YouTube Music, and it can also be listened to on Spotify, Amazon Music, Podcast Index, and on RSS.com. We hope you can join us in Valhalla again soon for more conversations.